content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Bahati Mutisia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazine. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from The Teen Magazine. The first Teen Magazine article is titled, The False Term Asian American. Coined by activists Emma G. and Yuji Ochioka, the term Asian American was a bridge meant to connect multi-ethnic Asian groups through their shared experiences in the diaspora. It was a call to action, one that reached across the differences in culture, appearance, and language to unite Asians in the fight against the racism and prejudice they faced living in America. Not only was it a unifying agent, but it was also a rebuttal to the derogatory terms that had been used against Asian Americans. Its purpose was to become a new pan-Asian ethnic identity that all Asians could relate to and see themselves in. However, the disparities in the Asian community have made it difficult for the term Asian American to truly live out its purpose. The false monolith. While the term Asian American has sought to unite diverse ethnic groups, it may have unwittingly created the false image of a singular Asian group. When attempting to unify these diverse groups, many overlook the differences in culture, experiences, and appearances of different ethnic groups, which inevitably leads to erasure and lack of true representation for Asians. Asian activism has been primarily centered around East Asians and their experiences, causing the front of Asian activism to be constructed primarily of East Asian issues and cultures. This leads to the accidental oversight of non-East Asian experiences or problems and contributes to the belief that all Asians will face the same issues, hence a monolithic group. While some Asian ethnicities share cultural values or traditions, they also have their own unique characteristics that make up their culture. There has been a lack of widespread representation and media showing these differences that give these ethnic groups their own identity instead of sweeping them under one label. While pursuing a pan-Asian ethnic union, it is crucial to understand that not all Asians look the same and that their culture can be similar or drastically different. Pitting Asian Americans as monolithic group fuels false beliefs about Asians and leaves room for stereotyping and lack of diversity. The lack of diverse Asian representation. As a young girl, I was often told that I could accept Disney's Mulan as a representation of my identity, that Mulan was a prime example of Asian representation I had looked for in my life. The problem wasn't with Mulan, but it was instead the fact that I simply could not connect to the culture depicted. Has the message of a pan-Asian led to the erasure of diversity in media? Because of the centralization of East Asians, many pieces of media depicting Asian individuals will often only represent those from East Asia societies and therefore not truly represent the diverse Asian ethnicities. The media is extremely important when it comes to education of the general public, and the lack of Asian ethnic groups in the media only further stigmatizes Asian Americans as a monolithic group. The lack of Asian representation not only pertains to different ethnic groups, but it also pertains to the way gender, sexuality, identity, and interpersonal dynamics can be depicted by Asians in the media. Stereotypes regarding these topics have negatively affected the perception of Asian Americans. For example, Asian women have been depicted as, quote, exotic and docile, whereas Asian men have been depicted to be effeminate. It must also be acknowledged that these stereotypes can differ between Asian ethnic groups, but they all carry one similarity. These harmful beliefs can promote racist views, and it is important to work to dismantle these stereotypes in the media. In order to truly have pan-Asian representation, it's crucial that the media represents Asian individuals of differing genders, sexualities, ethnicities, and dynamics. Economic disparities. According to a Pew Research Center 2018 report, there is substantial income inequality among Asian Americans. The report measured and compared the income of Asians in the 90th percentile of earners to the income of Asians in the 10th percentile of earners. In 1970, the 90th percentile of Asian earners earned 6.1 times the 10th percentile of Asian earners, and the inequality was only exacerbated in 2016, when the gap had grown to the 90th percentile Asian earners gaining 10.7 times more than the 10th percentile Asian earners. One reason for this severe income gap is the nature of different Asian ethnic groups' immigration to the United States. As a result of the end of the Vietnam War and the Immigration and Nationality Act, the Asian immigrants coming into the United States did not often have high-skill occupations and were often low-skilled workers. The Immigration Act of 1990 then brought in more high-skilled Asian immigrants, which contributed to creating the gap in income seen today in Asian ethnic groups. It is important to recognize the economic disparities between Asian American ethnic groups in order to dispel the false monolithic front and to deconstruct the model minority myth. Asians have been swept under the same label economically, creating misleading perceptions about Asian wealth. When the varying degrees of wealth found in Asian ethnic groups are ignored, not only does it portray a false image that undermines Asian struggles and a history in America, but it also provides an opportunity for anti-Asian sentiment to be justified. A new identity. Even with the disparities found in the Asian community, they should not serve as barriers to a united pan-Asian front. Instead of letting these differences further divide the Asian American community, it's vital that these differences are highlighted and acknowledged to strengthen the movement towards equality and equity for Asians. Taking in the perspectives of various Asian ethnic groups and taking account of the history that each group carries with them will create a new identity for the term Asian American, an identity that hopefully all Asians can look at with pride. And there were two images with this article that I'll describe. One is a photo of a woman holding a sign in protest that says, "It's exhausting going from invisible to fetish to model minority to hunted like prey." The other photo is an image of someone holding up a sign that says, "Break the silence." And the last photo is an image of a woman with a mask on that says, "I am not a virus." The author of this article is Laura Truong. Laura is a Vietnamese high school sophomore whose love of writing stemmed from her love of reading. Some of her favorite books include The Poppy War and Vicious. Other than reading, Laura spends her time consuming copious amounts of dark chocolate and shopping for eccentric earrings. The next article is titled, Respect. A little bit goes a long way. A recent New York Times article, To Tip or Not to Tip, recounts how people are frustrated by being asked to tip at every location, even when they're not being served as seated customers. Many customers at coffee shops or takeout restaurants expressed annoyance at this new expectation, particularly because the tips are now digital. That means the employee can usually see the payment screen in front of them. But is to tip or not to tip really about a larger problem? It's not about the dollar, it's about the lack of respect. Several people in the New York Times article complained that every dollar adds up. That's true. If I budget a $5 a day for coffee 5 days a week, that's about $100 a month for coffee. But if I have to tip a dollar every time, that's about $120 a month for coffee. Okay, on a budget, that can really add up. But those who serve coffee also need to make ends meet. What if I considered getting coffee 4 days a week so that the people who serve me, who are also likely on a budget, can earn a living? Service industry jobs are essential. They are valuable. If we degrade service industry workers, then no one wants to do the job. On the flip side of the problem remains the workers themselves. Those who can afford to go out for coffee, takeout, or other on-the-go amenities should consider the value of those who make that convenience possible. What if everyone who serves takeout never earns a tip? Who will make our food? Who will pack the shelves at our grocery stores? What would we do if nobody served us food at restaurants? How would our lives be different if nobody made our coffee while we drove to work? What if no one collected our garbage or filled up our gas tanks? I know. This is a New Jersey, PA, Pennsylvania thing. When we think of essential workers, we think of doctors or police officers, and these are often the people that receive our gratitude. However, essential workers also include the garbage collector, the barista, the fast food worker, and the mailman. The people in these roles are often overlooked, degraded, and disrespected. Yet their value to society is essential. Making fun of service jobs, where the disrespect begins. Serving people well is not easy. However, it is critical for a profitable business. Yet, even many teachers mock these jobs, often telling someone that they can flip burgers as a type of insult. As a society, we have learned to lack respect for those perceived to be socially or economically below us. This is even true when it comes to teaching as a profession, which is seen as a less than desirable job. When I was younger, I wanted to be a preschool teacher. The response? People would say, "What? Do you want to finger paint for the rest of your life?" While being a teacher may seem very different than a fast food worker, as one requires a college degree and the other one doesn't, the treatment is often the same. Why? Because both are in the service industry. Whether it's providing a warm cup of coffee or teaching kids how to read and write, both of these jobs are providing something in order to benefit others. So, if these roles make others' lives easier, why are they so looked down upon? The main reason for this is due to the economic status that comes with these professions. Fast food workers or baristas often make minimum wage, And in many states, teachers barely make enough to live above the poverty line. While a degree is not required to serve people food, the job does require manners and decorum, especially at nicer establishments. In both cases, the pay does not accurately reflect the benefit or the skills needed. These roles bring many benefits to society, but their treatment is based solely on their economic status. How should we determine who we value? In American society, we tend to value people based on their earning power. Therefore, our treatment of others is often based on how much they make, because we tend to associate high-earning jobs with making people worthy of our respect. However, we should value all people equally. Those who make the world better and allow our days to run slightly smoother have just as much value and importance as someone earning an 8-figure salary, sometimes even more. After a long day of work, we likely appreciate the barista making our coffee far more than an upper-class CEO on the other side of the world. Okay, this article was written by Sammy Kellner. Sammy Kellner is a high school junior who is very passionate about politics and social justice issues. She is the founder and president of her school's Key Club and has a podcast called Politically Blonde. She's also a contributing editor for the Marginalia Review of Books, and was awarded a 2021-2022 internship with the Writing College at the Women's Writing Institute. In her free time, she enjoys spending time with friends and family, traveling, and going to the beach. And the next article is titled, Make This Summer Meaningful: Community Service Ideas for Teenagers. Many teenagers tend to look for volunteering opportunities during the summer or even besides their studies to gain some experience. In addition to this, some high schools require students to complete a specific number of community service hours in order to graduate, and doing volunteer work is good for college too. So, if you're interested in finding out what community service to do or where to go this summer, this article is definitely for you. Number one, join volunteer organizations. There are thousands of volunteer organizations around the world that you can participate in. Here are some that have the best reputation I would recommend to you. They include lots of fun and meaningful work, like taking care of seniors, animals, immigrants, education, health, and hunger. There's Volunteer Match, National Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster, International Volunteer HQ, Global Volunteers, and UN Volunteers. Aside from those big organizations above, you can also join your local area and city area organization. The matter is not really about how large the organization is. It's about the thought put in while doing the service work. Number two, teach English or tutor. Needless to say, everyone is now realizing the significance and popularity of English. Yes, it is undoubtedly the international language. However, there are some that unfortunately neither have chances to approach nor learn English. So why don't you make your summer meaningful by spending a certain time and effort teaching them? And if English is your mother language, then tutoring your favorite subject, like mathematics, literature, and psychology, can be a great option. Besides, you can help international students with English, or try tutoring your schoolmates in lower classes. Anyway, it is also pivotal that you can prepare your curriculum, because if you decide to become a teacher or tutor, you need to understand your students' levels pretty well before bringing any new knowledge to them. Number 3, become translators or collaborators for some websites. If you are bilingual or trilingual, that's great. Apply to become translators or collaborators for some websites. This is a substantial chance for you to better that language, to gain more experience by working and learning from the adept. Number 4, prepare or serve meals. This is the perfect volunteer activity for those who have basic knowledge about cooking or have super warm hearts or both. Your pleasure is to help others. I dare you to say you will have a wonderful time seeing people's smiles and happiness when you serve their meals. You can do this kind of job for hospitals, TB nursing homes, orphanages, or local kitchens. Number 5, get your hands dirty in a community kitchen. If you enjoy being outdoors, supporting a community garden is a great way to give back while also meeting new people. Community gardens can vary from flower beds to vegetable gardens to homes for live chickens. Number six, help spread knowledge at your local museum. Do you love the wonders of natural history and the great stories of the past? You can help keep these institutions alive by donating your time and energy to your local museum. While you might not be excavating a dig site, every little bit helps, and it helps them keep the love of science and history alive. Number 7, make a difference. Help animals find forever homes. Be a friendly and compassionate voice at the other end of the phone, meaning volunteer at a crisis line that relies on teen volunteers as peer counselors, such as Teen Line. Help children with disabilities shine. Work with special needs kids or adults through an organization like Best Buddies or Special Olympics. Donate anything or visit dosomething.org. You've likely outgrown a few pair of pants or amassed toys you no longer use. Clean out your closet and give away gently used items to your local Goodwill or Salvation Army. Let's have a great summer by doing volunteer work aside from relaxing and spending time on yourself. Have a fantastic summer. This article was written by V. Chow. V is a writer from Vietnam. She is studying in the U.S. and has a high. She is studying in the U.S. as a high school student. V loves watching movies, reading books in her free time. Hope you will have a good time while reading her articles. And the last article from the Teen Magazine is Tips and Tricks for the Aspiring Journalist. Let's be honest here. Journalism's hard. It's so difficult to come up with an interesting pitch, do the necessary research for an article, and find people willing to be interviewed. And that's all even before writing the article. That being said, it's such a rewarding field. Talking to people and hearing their stories and experiences is definitely one of the best parts of journalism. While the field is rewarding, it's good to have some form of preparation going into it due to the intensity of this job. So, how can you expand your options and gain the skills required for the career? May I present to you five tips and tricks that helped me become a better journalist and have given me an inside look into this field. Number one, write, write, write. It sounds like an obvious tip, but it's very crucial. Continuously writing can help you accomplish two different things: formalizing and improving your writing style. Keeping your writing style consistent and coherent makes all the difference in your article. No one wants to read something poorly written, no matter how great of a work you may be publishing. Proper grammar and punctuation go a long way. Having a writer's voice really matters in articles, especially when determining what kind of article you're going to write. An article about Netflix movies, for example, won't use the same writing style and the tone as an article discussing current events. You can be much more informal when addressing your audience. Number two, practice your interviewing skills. Though interviewing may seem like a simple part of the job, it can oftentimes be the most challenging. Finding people willing to be interviewed for an article is a hassle all in its own, and it's a whole other challenge to ensure they've answered your questions properly. Nevertheless, interviews definitely make or break an article. Number three, learn different mediums of media. A common misconception people have is that journalism consists of writing. I should know. I've had thousands of people ask me. This is far from the case. Writing may be the backbone of journalism, but as technology and media have evolved, so has storytelling. Journalism has moved on to digital media. Methods such as video, audio, and photojournalism are examples of more ways to tell stories. Number four, look for writing, editing, internships, or pre-college programs. This may be trickier for some, depending on where part of the world you live in. That being said, there are many ways to find journalism programs, no matter where you live. And number five, always stay informed. Information is constantly changing, so it can be difficult to keep up with the latest updates. Yet, that's one, if not the most important job of the journalist, since they report on what's currently happening. It can be challenging at times. Audio can be lost, a pitch can be rejected, an interviewee can cancel at the last minute. But the eventual satisfaction once you get a piece is published makes it all worthwhile. And this was written by Savasti Koronis. Okay, well, we have come to the end of today's episode. Be sure to listen next time. We hope that you've enjoyed it. I'm Bahati Mutisia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This episode is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.